it wouldn't be the Springboks, but I think it's going to be a
No, the
very tough
Springboks don't really
series.
watch our show, so you kind of have to say it's Ireland, or else we're just going to cut your internet connection.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. We're going to cover that Ulster Challenge Cup semi-final defeat to Leicester Tigers later and get journalist Brendan Nell on from South Africa to talk Lions. But let's get straight into the Leinster game. The Leinster game v La Rochelle, we just saw the end of their mads. 32-23 to La Rochelle away. It was always going to be a really big challenge, but I don't think probably, well, we certainly, I didn't anyway, see that coming and see that like as convincing a victory for La Rochelle to unfold.
Yeah, I think they were quite cagey at the start. But once they got into their game, got their power game going, started moving the ball, you know, creating one-on-ones, you know, they just had some huge guys in their team and they were able to, you know, keep creeping over the game line. We obviously saw, you know, Leinster get a lot of penalties in the first half, but once that tide turned in the second half, it was pretty unrelenting.
Yeah, I kind of looked at the start of the game and I thought, was this going to turn into one of these French performances where they were just going to keep giving away penalties? Because the first probably 10, 15 minutes, Leinster were kind of all over them. I think the stat there around 15 minutes in was 73% possession to Leinster. So they were starving La Rochelle of the ball. But then when they were going through multiple phases, La Rochelle were giving away silly penalties, getting caught on the wrong side, you know, having extra jabs at the ball when the referee was telling them to get their hands off. So Leinster did start very well going 7-up.
Yeah, like starting going 7-up and then you get a guy in the sin bin, you know, looking back, you know, they really needed to score again there. You know, it actually ended up being 7-6 by the time he's come back on. You know, if they push that out to even 10-0 or 14-0, that's a very different game in a semi-final. But yeah, look, it was disappointing. There's no getting away from it. You know, it's hard to kind of go, well, what could we have done differently? When you get overpowered by a side like that, it's very, very hard.
Yeah, the last couple of seasons, I suppose, La Rochelle have been this side that have been unbelievably exciting. You know, you heard Ron O'Gara talking about it during the week and a few people taking the mickey out of him about the KBA as if it was this revolutionary kind of, you know, yeah, acronym. So, but in fairness, I felt Leinster actually kind of shut that down. So in another way, I think that was even more impressive from La Rochelle, that they found other ways to keep getting over the gain line. They did go after the seam of the Leinster defence a few times. They picked and went a few times. They had some great little plays off that nine, Kerr Barlow. I did think himself and Ihea West had outstanding matches, in fairness.
Very much so. No, they controlled it really well. Yeah, like those little picks around the ruck, you know, people don't realise that that actually shortens the line and creates more space. And, you know, you want your 10, 20, 30 to have kind of reasonably good spacing. Hmm. You know, with those little picks right by the ruck, teams have to then tighten up. You're basically going with an extra defender in that, you know, shorter space, which is then going to create more space on the edge. And once they shortened the Leinster line and went to the edge, I thought they were very good.
Yeah, the kickoff seemed to be causing havoc for the La Rochelle. I think the receiver of that seemed to be the right winger the whole time. The sun was glaring into his eyes. And they were actually probably lucky not to give away a score from that as well. At one stage towards the end, he almost turned his back on the ball, which I'd say Raj was, he essentially broke his computer up in the press room.
Yeah, like did you think even like on 60 minutes, do you think Leinster could still do it, or what was your kind of feeling watching it?
I thought they were finding it hard to find ways back into the game because, as you said there, once, like, this is the biggest game in La Rochelle's history, and they're, you know, from the journey they've gone on, getting up to the top 14 and recruiting all these great players, you know, Victor Vito, you know, the two halfbacks we just mentioned there, Antonio, like these, just even there's a number of the top French internationals that are there as well. So in the past, they kind of had this, they built a culture of a team that, of probably players that were somewhat unknown. They still have their captain who's been there for the long haul, but it's been a pretty impressive journey for them. And it, obviously you've got that side plot of Ronan O'Gara, the ex-Munster man. You know, yeah. There's a, you know, I'm sure a high level of respect, but a deep hatred for Leinster there. It was particularly nice for him. And then John O'Gibbs, ex-Leinster coach, you know, winning, you know, a seriously impressive coach and a glittering career with Leinster, the amount of trophies he won. So it must have been extra nice for those guys to be involved to knock out this, you know, highly talented Leinster team.
Yeah, I think the Leinster team, what's hurt them is that it's been a disjointed few months. Like, if you look at what games they've had the opportunity of having their, like, full 15 starters out, you look at the league final was one of the days. The Exeter match was another one. Then you've got guys like, obviously, Johnny was out, which was a big loss. Gary's only coming back to fitness. James Ryan's only coming back to fitness. Mm. You know, Robbie hasn't been able to play alongside Gary, for example. Mm. And I think it showed, you know, I think it looked like a few of those guys just hadn't got enough rugby under their belts. And, you know, even just to have had one more game to lead in, like you know, what happens on a traditional season, you've got one game leading into a European to kind of tee up.
Mm.
And, like, they didn't have that. You know, you could see the side that was put out last week against Munster was very much a mixed side. They didn't play particularly well, so you're not carrying any momentum into the game.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the other impressive thing I thought from La Rochelle was that they're giving away an awful lot of penalties and you're going, oh, you know, are they this talented French side that when push comes to shove, they're going to keep getting pinged in a big match. A team like Leinster that doesn't give away many penalties and thrives off teams that do. And I thought the impressive part of that was how good they were keeping Leinster out because, yeah, some of their decision-making was sloppy around the ruck initially and they gave away penalties. But the more and more that the game wore on, they made some great decisions there. You had Victor Vito causing havoc. You obviously had Skelton, Antonio knocking a few of the boys behind the gain line. And then the sub-French hooker, Pierre Bourguerie, had three turnovers, like a couple of really cool...
The one when Porter comes in, like Porter's one of the strongest guys playing the game. He's come in and given him everything to get him off the ball. And your man hasn't budged.
Mm.
Like that was... I know that was at a really crucial time in the game as well. Mm. Like, you know, you go from, let's say, your halfway line up to the edge of the 22, you know, you've put together a really good passage of play and then bang, turnover, and you're back on, you know, you're suddenly defending a line out in your own 10. Like, that massively takes the wind out of your sails.
I think it's the biggest part of Leinster's game as well when they're winning and playing their best is a team would only get maybe one or two turnovers against them at the ruck time because they're in there so quick, you know, in numbers, you know, really physical clean outs with low body positions. And I think the fact that the La Rochelle forwards started to get access in there, it just grew their confidence. And it meant that when Leinster in the second half playing up the hill, kind of into the sun, and they were going through a number of phases, you had the likes of the number of those guys, Gregory Aldred as well, had a brilliant game, just getting over the game and just stopping that momentum that Leinster were building.
Yeah, like that comes back to my original point of they just looked a bit disjointed. Like that's what you get from playing, you know, a run of 2, 3, 4, 5 games with a group that, you know what movement the guy beside you is going to do. And that's the difference, like, between half a second of getting to the ruck and clearing, you know, winning the space before even someone gets over it, or not really knowing exactly where the person's going to go, small bit of doubt, you're a fraction high, they're over the ball. And with the rules now, like, once you lose the space, you're giving away a penalty or you're losing the ball.
Yeah, because initially you're thinking, you know, have La Rochelle lost the ref early because they gave away a number of penalties, the 7 gets binned, and you're going, you know, will that work against them later on in the game?
Mm.
But they tidied up some of the stuff they were doing, in fairness. And then obviously Leinster got that yellow card. I think James Lowe had his feet on the ball trying to slow it down.
Yeah.
Thankfully, well, that didn't actually cost Leinster in the end on the scoreboard, but really it just... it meant that La Rochelle were holding on to the ball for longer periods of time and probably tiring out the Leinster defenders.
Yeah. Did you think that was a yellow card? Like, for me, I think he's kind of... The guy's holding him in. Something I don't like is that holding a guy in a bad position. Like, it's just...
Yeah. I think that they didn't really do a replay of it. It was just a yellow very quickly because, you know, La Rochelle had gone through a number of phases. They were in the red zone there. They're, you know, in a great position to score. I think, you know, the ref, is he looking to kind of balance the books? La Rochelle had been on top. Because I didn't see a replay of what actually happened, but what the commentator said, I think it was Bronagh Driscoll said that he had his feet on the ball so the nine couldn't get it. So obviously the referee spotted that.
Nah, it's cynical then, it's a yellow, yeah.
Yeah, but back to Ronan O'Gara, I suppose, as well, and that Irish influence, which is, you know, I'm gutted for the Leinster lads that they've lost because they're in search of that fifth star under Stuart Lancaster, and probably a bit of a pattern of the past couple of seasons as they've been flying in the pool games and then they just get taken out. Like, you know, you had Saracens, obviously, in the quarter, and then La Rochelle, in fairness, were full worth for their victory today.
Yeah. Do you think one of the issues is that Leinster aren't getting enough challenging games in the league, and then it's almost now too big a step up. Not too big a step for them. The step up in quality from the Pro 14 to Europe. Do you think that that's an issue?
I probably thought it was an issue going into the Saracens game because I didn't think we had a big enough challenge there.
Yeah.
But like, if you wind back a few weeks, and to be honest, I don't think Exeter are the team they were when they won it last year. But at the same time, huge challenge going away. And that was, you know, what a performance by Leinster there for 65 minutes after coming back from 14-0 down. So that was a big test. You know, the Munster final was a big test. You know, that's as good as you can get in the Pro 14, really. So I'm not so sure that is an excuse. I feel maybe La Rochelle on the day were better, and I was surprised at just how well they performed, and you know, easing into the game, and I was probably naive, not looking at the likes of Victor Vito, even those two halfbacks we talked about. Like, people in the Northern Hemisphere that follow rugby might not be aware just how experienced those guys are from their Super Rugby, you know, quality that they've had. For, you know, they've been with some of the best teams down there, and that nine has around 20 caps for the All Blacks coming off the, bear in mind, coming off the bench. But you know, you go through the foreigners they have in their team. You know, pulling Brice Doolan from Racing, like, it's a star-studded side.
Yeah, no, and like, they've a huge budget. Like, some of those French sides, their budget could be 30 million. You know, and I think Leinster's something like 7 or 8. There's a big difference there, and you can see that with the quality that they're able to recruit with. Like, even someone like Will Skelton, like. Mm. It looked like some of the guys out there today look like boys up against him, and I look like a boy up against them, you know. Mm. So it's tough, but I think on their day, Leinster know that we can still, you know, beat teams like La Rochelle away from home. Mm. But it is disappointing all the same.
Remember playing against Will Skelton when he was lining out for Australia in November 2013, I think it was, and I'd never played against as big a human in my life. He was just so big, and fair play to him. He's, you know, he's gone from a successful, really successful Saracen side. He's won a Heineken Cup, and I'm sure a lot of players can go to France, and, you know, they can maybe drink a little bit too much wine, eat a bit too much bread, and just get used to that slower pace at the top 14. But to be fair, he was still going at 65 minutes there today.
No, it was very impressive. He's. It looks like he's actually lost a small bit of weight. He's, you know, possibly trimmed down. But geez, he moves well for someone of his size.
Yeah, because I looked at the game going, you know, I think we had talked about it last week on last week's show about how Leinster would go after them, how they could pull them apart. And, you know, I mentioned that maybe in the last 15, 20 minutes that if it was a dry day, which it was, Leinster, you know, got into that shape where they started, moving them wide to wide and tiring them out. But I suppose because La Rochelle were making so many strong decisions at the breakdown and knocking them behind the gain line, they couldn't really get into that multi-phase shape to do that to them.
It didn't suit Leinster in the way that the game was actually quite stop-start. There was a lot of penalties, you know, which gives teams a breather, you know. It's going to take, you know, 15, 20, 30 seconds to kick the ball to touch, get the line out set. You know, the first half for me didn't get going. So, you know, a lot of the time when I'm on the bench and I'm watching the game, I want to see what kind of speed is in the match. That you're thinking, right, the guys are going to be exhausted when I'm coming on here. This is going to be perfect. Or, geez, it's been really slow. you know, and it can also mean that there's a less likely chance of getting on as well, because players aren't going to fatigue as much.
Yeah, you know, that Ronan O'Gara side plot that I mentioned as well earlier on, like, just how happy is he going to be? Because the journey he's been on as a coach since he finished up has been, you know, a pretty brave one to go into some environments, you know, obviously going to Racing initially and then going down to the Crusaders and just picking up. He's probably just picked up so much knowledge. Like, what a intelligent guy, you know, what an intelligent mind, rugby mind from his playing days. It was very, very different when you move over to the other side of the fence as a coach. And I think it's impressive how he's done it, you know, going to these different environments, you know, bringing his family down to New Zealand, you know, coming back up, back to France. And, you know, after signing that 3-year extension, I am delighted to see it going well for him.
Yeah, no, look, it was a great day for Raj. And as you said, like, what's been really impressive is how he's got the team playing. It also looks like they really play for him, you know. They look like a really tight team. Anytime you're hearing snippets in the media, you know, it sounds like a very happy camp, you know, whatever way he's got the schedule, you know, I'm sure it's a good place to be and very enjoyable. It's also enjoyable playing that brand of rugby, you know.
How could it not be? Running off Skelton's shoulder through gaps, it'd be all right. But yeah. Raj, what an interesting guy. What a great guy. But I think as well, for him, the fact that, you know, a lot of people have been talking about him, you know, when is he going to come back to Ireland? You know, will he get involved in the Irish team? You know, him and Paul O'Connor's at the dream coaching ticket. You know, back to Munster, he's the, you know, I'm sure everyone will start talking now, you know, they've got to get him back for what he's doing. But I think he's doing it the right way. You know, he's biding his time, because it really, if he rushes back to Ireland, it's probably a bit of a cul-de-sac for him, because where does he go then? Like, if it doesn't go well. So, you know, him with this La Rochelle side, who knows, they could go on and beat Toulouse in this final. But it's a good path he's gone down coaching-wise.
I wasn't overly surprised to see him extend. Like, he's, you know, his family are set up over in France, a lovely place to live. And as you said, coming back could have led him down cul-de-sac. You know, not saying that it wouldn't have been successful for him, but if you're happy where he's at, you know, keep going. Sign another, you know, I think he signed another 2 or 3 years. And then weigh up his options off the back of that. But I think as well, when you've been on a kind of a project and it's only coming to fruition now, it's very hard to jump ship, you know, just as it's about to bear fruit. So, it'll be interesting following them now over the next few seasons.
Yeah, he did an interview, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, or it could have been after the sale. Yeah, it would have been a couple of weeks ago. So after the Sale game in the quarter, and it was a really impressive performance by La Rochelle. And they asked him about how things were going, you know, why is it going so well? And BT, they're asking questions. And what Raj did say, which I found interesting but not a surprise with him, he said he's coaching these French guys. You went over and played there, Mads, right? And I know Johnny went over and played there. And a lot of the stuff over there could be very frustrating when you come from an environment like a Leinster or, you know, a Munster, Ulster, Connacht, you know, a very structured, you know, Irish way of playing, because we're not the biggest men. You know, we played I think the teams here get the most out of the players, and there's high standards on and off the field, and there isn't those high standards when you go over to France. And what Raj said was, he said, I've tried to coach I've tried to get to know the individual and coach the individual before I start coaching the team. And I thought it was a really interesting point, because I can imagine him just getting close to the likes of, say, Antonio, that tight head.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be probably getting close to this guy wondering, how am I going to get the best out of him? How am I going to get him to want to win a scrum penalty on 60 minutes? How am I going to get him not to want to walk back after the ball has been kicked?
Yeah.
And he seems to have cracked that somehow.
Yeah, and it's kind of a sign of his intelligence, you know, and his personal skills, that he's building those individual relationships with all the, you know, with all the players. And he's, you know, as we said, you can see that the players are playing for him. They look happy, like, you know, we know from playing with Raj, he's a very kind of positive guy to be around. He's an enjoyable person to be in the company of.
Yeah.
You know. So I'm sure it's, you know, it's great having him as coach, and he's so captivating. I'm sure at the front of the room in meetings, you know, he's got great wit as well. So
yeah, he could be just telling you that the sky is blue, but you have everyone, you know, hanging off the edge of their seat.
Exactly. Yeah,
he just has that way about him. Yeah. The way he talks. But on the Leinster side as well, I suppose, you know, it is bitterly disappointing, but I think they've had a fantastic season, you know, lifting the Pro 14 again. But they will be gutted about that. I do think that, you know, it's unfortunate that a couple of the Leinster guys as well maybe won't get another chance to stick their hand up in like a really high profile game now for, you know, going into this Lions tour.
Yeah, like, of the guys in the Leinster squad, like, I think Tadhg is obviously nailed on. Yeah, who else do you think is going to be in with a good chance on Thursday?
Well, I think Johnny will go.
Yeah.
You know, and he wasn't considered for selection for that game because he had a head knock, but he will go if he's fit. So it would be, you know, you'd imagine it'd be Tadhg himself. You know, I do think James Ryan should go. I think that, he hasn't had that much game time. And it was a tough day for the Leinster pack today because they probably got outplayed by the La Rochelle side over the course of 80 minutes. But I think the quality he's shown over the last couple of years, and I know he missed most of the Six Nations, but I think you've got to bring him as well. The other one was Ronan Kelleher. I think he could go as a bolter for me. I think it's an outside bet, but I don't think, you know, Ken Owens, obviously Gatland knows him so well.
Ken Owens will go, I think.
Oh, Ken Owens will go, but I just think as a bolter there's the door's open at hooker, really. You know, for someone else to go. No one else has been outstanding. You've had Cowan Dickey and Jamie George chopping and changing. I don't think the Scottish hookers really stuck their hand up, you know, that much. So I think Ronan could, you know, be in with the chance to go because he has that size and he's so quick as well, very good over the ball.
Yeah, I don't know enough about like the intricacies of playing hooker, but, you know, Rob Herring's gone well as well, so he's got to be, you know, he was starting ahead of him for Ireland, which, you know, says a lot in itself. You know, and he has played well. He played well again on Friday night.
Robbie's going to go, sorry.
Robbie Henshaw will go.
Robbie will go, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then again, sorry.
Sorry, I was saying Rob Herring there at hooker.
Yeah, Robbie Herring could be in the mix, but I think we probably definitely left out Robbie. That's someone definitely go from.
Gary, I think, is having a good chance as well.
Yeah,
you know,
certainly.
Those injuries have obviously been a bit of a setback. You know, he wasn't at his best, like he'd say that today himself, but not that he had a bad game. But, you know, Gary in European semi-finals, that's when, you know, he's at his very best, and we've seen that over the last few years. But I still think Robin,
yeah, with George North gone, like, I think Gary could be in with a good chance of going, because it's disappointing for a few of those guys. Obviously, you want to win the Highland Cup, but it's this shop window now, you know, for those guys that don't get that shop window now in what is as close to a test match or probably, you know, essentially a test match club-wise in the Champions Cup final, but he won't get the opportunity to showcase there. But in the, you know, the Rainbow Cup, there could be, you know, I'm sure Gatland will be looking at those games as well.
Yeah, like, I think we've got two Interpros now and then two more regular season games in the Rainbow Cups. There's only four games left, and then I think it's maybe a final. So it's, you know, we're on the home stretch of the season now.
Yeah, you've got, you know, the other Leinster guys we probably left out that could be in with outside chances as well would be, you know, Hugo Keenan's had a very strong Six Nations. It was tough for the Leinster backs today because they weren't presented with that much space. Yeah. I think over the course of the season, you know, he's got to be in the conversation as well.
Yeah, like, obviously Hogg's going to go. The fact that he covers wing as well, you know, he's a good option. He's one who's going to be right on the line. It's going to be very close.
Yeah, it will be. There's some big decisions there, and I'm sure everyone will be watching closely leading into Thursday. The other semi-final then between your old mates Bordeaux and Toulouse, what did you make of that?
Well, like, it was very difficult conditions. You know, it was wet, wet and windy. I always thought Toulouse, you know, looked like the side that were going to win it. They're just a bit more experience. Bordeaux actually, unfortunately, had a good few injuries leading into the game. You know, the team that played Racing and had a great win at home was actually very different to the team that played against Toulouse. And some really key guys out, like the likes of Lamarat in the midfield. You know, they end up having to go with quite a young guy. He was in the academy when I was there. He's a good player, but you know, he wouldn't Uberti. He wouldn't have like the experience that Lamrat would have. But yeah, like the quality of those Toulouse halfbacks, like even in those poor weather, like they just were able to figure it out really well. And Jalibert is a great player for Bordeaux, but didn't quite have the power up front to get him that front football to get his game going.
Really, Bordeaux were a bit of a surprise package to be in the last four, being honest. Like they were for me anyway. You know, yeah. I think on a dry day there in that level, that you know, a match of that kind of magnitude, I think that Toulouse would have pulled away a bit more there.
Yeah, if the weather was better, they could have, definitely. But no, look, in fairness to Bordeaux, like they had a great year last year. Leading into the lockdown, they were leading the top 14. So, you know, they've lost Samir Rada to Bristol, which is a big loss. Like, you build a team around him. But no, it'll be a cracking final. Who do you fancy for the final?
I think Toulouse are going to go on and win their fifth European title, yeah. I think La Rochelle will struggle to back up that level of performance again. And yeah. Toulouse are coming off a kind of average performance on a wet day. I think that with everyone fit, I think, you know, it's going to be a cracking battle at halfback there, because I was really impressed with those two Kiwis today. Weston and Kerr Barlow, yeah. And you know, you've got Dupont and Intermac, as you mentioned. You know, Dupont running that beautiful inside line again that he picks up. You know, it's a try every second game, really, for him doing that.
He's possibly the best player in the world at the moment.
Yeah, he could be. Yeah, and who would you back? What do you think for Twickenham?
Yeah, I think Toulouse will deserve it if they win it. You know, they've been building, they've got close the last couple of seasons. If La Rochelle click though, like we saw today, like when they're on, they're really impressive. So it's definitely teeing up to be a cracking final where both sides really look to play. It's not like, you know, it's going to be a kick fest. These teams are going to go out and play and move the ball around. So it should be a great watch.
Oh, if it's dry, it's going to be. Yeah. It could be one of the games of the season. But before we move on to talk about the Challenge Cup, just to let you all know, our next episode will be on Thursday evening. And we'll be reacting to the Lions squad announcement and getting the take from South Africa too. Keep an eye out for that on YouTube, on your favourite podcast feed. So we are going to move on to the Challenge Cup now, unfortunately, Mads. And, you know, Leicester getting the better of Ulster over there. What did you make of the game, you know, as an overview kind of?
Yeah, it was very much a game of two halves. Like, we went to plan in the first half. We came in, I think we were 17-6 up. Had a lot of the territory, a lot of possession. You know, we'd managed their momentum well. It's kind of a feeling like that if we got the next score, that should be it. You know, if you push that out to 20-6 or, you know, 23-6, it's a long road back in the semi-final. But in fairness to Leicester, they kind of changed their tactics at halftime. They got their power game going. Their side, like when they get into your 22, they're very tough to stop. Like, they've got some big guys. They got Nadolo on the ball a few times, getting one-on-ones with our backs.
Particularly in Welford Road.
Yeah, and then, unfortunately, you know, John had the collision with Nadolo, which, unfortunately, he was knocked out. And then Elby had to come on. It was tough on Elby because he's hasn't played a whole lot the last probably six weeks. And then you're being thrown into a semi-final. And it was one of those games where a lot of it came down to box kicking and kick chase. And, you know, while it went reasonably well in the first half, they started winning the aerial battle and then managed to get access to our 22 off the back of either winning the aerial battle, getting penalties and getting down there. And, you know, any time they had opportunities, they got points, you know. And I thought George Ford had a cracking game. It was one of the best performances at out half I've seen in quite a while. Just controlled it really well, kept putting the ball in front of their big pack, kept the scoreboard ticking over. Like, even just, you know, stepping up and taking a drop goal, 3 points. You know, they go from the halfway line up to the 22, bang, 3 points back. You know, it's in a semi final like that, it's a real killer. Like, you just feel like it's, you know, unrelenting. But no, look, it was very disappointing for us. It was a great opportunity to win a trophy. and we made it clear that we wanted to go after the Challenge Cup. Small but unfortunate that we've had to play three games away on, you know, on the road with Harlequins, Northampton and then Leicester. But look, we know on our day that that was a game that we could have and probably should have won.
Yeah, I think those experienced guys probably showed their value, you know, for Leicester. I think, you know, Wigglesworth even in that first 40, you know, I think even strategically him for them in their dressing room leading into the game, very, very clever guy, you know, after being in that Saracen side of picking sides apart where they're weak, where you go after them. And then you had Ben Youngs coming in off the bench, which is probably a good decision from Borthwick because he was like a man possessed.
Yeah.
You know, he really got them going.
He played well. Like, he just is, his ability of the two of them to find space in the backfield, you know, either it's like topper kicks over the ruck or forward, like he's such a wide range of kicks. It's very hard to manage the backfield. But look, like looking back on the season, I know there's obviously a few games left to go, but it still has been a positive year for the club. Like, if you look at our league season, we've only lost to one side, albeit twice, and it is Leinster, but we've brought through a lot of young players. Like, you look at in the backs, like someone like James Hume has very much had a breakthrough season. I know he's played in previous years. Mikey Lowry and other guys, like, they've strung together kind of 20 plus performances. And then in the pack, like the likes of Dave McCann, Callum Reid, Tom O'Toole stepping up. You know, there's it is exciting going forward for Ulster, and, you know, I'm confident that they can definitely win trophies in the future.
Yeah, it's another step. It's disappointing, I'm sure, for you, but, you know, you do forget that those younger guys getting exposure to, you know, what it really takes to win.
Yeah,
knock at European games, because you're saying Hume there, but even, you know, Michael Lowry is still a young guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's still a young guy. You know, Rob Balakoon had a brilliant season. He's coming back off that long injury.
Yeah.
You know, you know, McElroy, Will Addison is now fit again. Like, really, when you were playing, I felt your best rugby, and he was fit. He is at the forefront of everything the good that happens for Ulster.
Will?
Yeah.
Yeah, Will's very silky. Like, I hadn't obviously played with Will. He came over to Ireland just after I'd left. But yeah, just even seeing him, how he moves and training, real silky runner. He's got, you know, really nice skills. It was tough on him as well. Like, you know, he's only played, what, like 20 minutes leading into a semi-final, 20 minutes in the guts of a year and a half or whatever, however long he's been out. But when he gets, you know, a run of games, he's going to be incredibly important for Ulster, and he's a really key guy in that back line.
Yeah, you talked about those young guys that, you know, have played so well and got these experiences that will, I'm sure, stand to them. But then you have Nakarawa coming in this summer, which will be a great addition for you guys. Because I think this is, I'm sure you might not be able to say this because you're playing with them, but I feel that, like, Ulster have really strong second rows, but a lot of them kind of, they do the same kind of thing. And I know Henderson's outstanding. He should go to the Lions, and, you know, Treadwell is brilliant. Alan O'Connor's played great for a number of seasons. But Nakarawa just brings something special that you're losing a Coetzee, who has this workload and, you know, 20 carries, 20 tackles, and he gets over the game because he's that big a man. And bringing someone like Nakarawa in, who is a big man, and he brings something different, I'm sure, would be great for you.
Yeah, like, he's the kind of guy, and the way the game has gone, there's, you know, less and less space nearly every year. Like, defences are harder to break down. He's the kind of guy, you can pull a rabbit out of his hat. You know, his offloading game is incredible. His ability to ride a tackle, get the ball away. You know, and I'm sure we'll be doing a lot of work on, you know, getting trail runners in behind him. You know, he'll carry it up and then try and slip a, you know, an offload away.
I'm sure, he'll be sneaking off his shoulder.
Absolutely, get in from 5 metres.
Very good. Well, that's all for part one. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll be chatting to South African journalist Brendan Nell.
House of Rugby Ireland. Tell us what you think by comment and rating us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. That's the way it goes.
Brendan, thanks for joining us. How's all down in South Africa?
Yeah, we're in a bit of a cold snap. Not cold by you guys' standards, but by South African standards, about 14 degrees. So it's a bit chilly over here for us this time of year.
We'd be shorts and t-shirt in that weather here.
Yeah, as you can see, I've got a jumper on. Yeah, it's quite cool for us. So.
So, Brendan, some Rainbow Cup action this weekend. The Stormers beat the Sharks despite two red cards there. What did you make of the game?
Well, I thought the interesting thing has been that the ball's been a lot in play then. The difference in South African teams from when we came back from after COVID now is being a lot more expansive rugby, which has been quite interesting. And I think you might see that a lot more when it comes to the Springboks this year than what you used to. There's been a real push over the last couple of months to play a lot more expansive game and a high-tempo game, which is interesting. It's been embraced and was definitely a display in Cape Town yesterday. Even though we had those two red cards, which made the game rather strange at times, but the team that got two red cards finished with more players on the field than the team that didn't get the red cards. That's quite strange.
If you were to grade the four South African sides, obviously, good friend and player from Ulster, Marcel's going to the Bulls, and they've made some great signings. Of the other, of the four sides, how would you grade them?
I think if you look at them at full strength, I mean, if we're talking about all their players available, I think the Bulls will probably be the top right now. A toss-up between the Sharks and the Stormers, a very close second, and then a bit of a distance to the Lions, who really much, very much in the rebuilding phase at the moment. So I think they'd be the fourth side there.
And like for hopes next year in the Rainbow Cup, obviously it's disappointing what happened this year, but how do you think they'll fare? Like, do you think that the Bulls will be good enough to compete at the very top?
Well, I think they can. Those teams have shown against the Southern Hemisphere sides when we played them, you can go up head to head with the New Zealand teams. Obviously, I think it's going to be a different challenge. And like a lot of I was speaking to the Cheetahs coach the other day, and he was saying the biggest thing for the South African teams is going to be getting used to practicing in summer sort of conditions and then flying on a Tuesday and getting to a freezing Ireland or Scotland on a Wednesday and then having to play in that weather on a Saturday. So I think it might take them a little while just to get used to those conditions and just that change and get their mindset right, but I don't see why they won't do well. It'll be interesting to me to see how they go against top sides like Leinster and Munster and Ulster, but I think definitely some of the other sides they should have quite easy beating.
Yeah, well, it's a great addition to the competition, because the reality is this year it hasn't been a good league season. If you look at the two conferences, you've got Leinster and Munster up the top, and then the other one you've got Munster and Connacht, and then there's quite a drop off, which isn't good for a league. You want it to be competitive. Now I think a lot of those teams will actually improve greatly next year. A lot of those teams had a tough year this year, but the international windows are at different times, and that hurts certain teams far more than others. The Irish squads are considerably bigger than some of the other squads in the tournament. But the addition of the South African sides is very welcome, and there's great excitement here about it.
I think that and over here as well, I think one of the big things for us is going to be you see already teams, the South African teams, are starting to try and get players back from overseas who in the past, they really wouldn't have bothered. And Marcel's a good example. In the past, they would let him see his pension off in the Ulster and then not worried about bringing him back. But they're looking to bring those players back with that sort of experience to bolster the teams. And I think that's good for the game. It's good for the youngsters coming through in South Africa to play with that sort of experience. And just to get that sort of experience back of European conditions is going to be great for this team.
Yeah, it's nice for the Pro 14 teams in the Northern Hemisphere as well to have a couple of nice away trips planned. Heading over to Cape Town to play the Stormers is probably better than, no disrespect, to heading to Port Elizabeth, and playing the Kings. There's probably not a whole lot to do in Port Elizabeth, so that'll be a welcomed away trip, I'd say, for you lads.
Yeah, Cape Town's incredible. One of the great cities. But also, it's nice. It kind of breaks up our season. I don't know how they're going to work it. I presume you'll probably play two games in South Africa, maybe. The schedule's not out, but I can't imagine you're going to be going over and back, every other week.
I think what they probably do is very much similar to what they did with the Cheetahs and the Kings, that you have a two-game trip. I think anything more than that becomes a bit taxing for the teams as well. So they have two trips to South Africa, I reckon, probably in the season.
Great, yeah. And moving on to the Lions, obviously with the season that's been had with COVID, you could see watching the game with the Sharks yesterday, it looked to me like they were guys that hadn't played a whole lot of rugby. Is there much concern leading into the Lions tour that the South African team haven't played enough?
I think definitely. And I think the biggest concern is that we haven't had a variety of rugby. I mean, I think you guys know very well, I think the Irish teams are probably sick of playing each other as well at this moment. You play against your mates the whole time, you know them so well, you don't really get to experiment and do other things. And those challenges that the different nations bring to this sort of contest, I think that is the concern. Plus, the Springboks haven't played since the World Cup final. So that's a huge concern for us. And a year out of Test rugby is huge for any player. For a coach, to be very honest. But the one good part about it, if you've got a coach that's a thinking coach, it's Rossie Erasmus. And I think they've been hard at work. They've been having camps. We'll have to see. They'll probably have one or two warm-up tests as well. Who they're going to be against, we still don't know. They're talking about French Barbarians and the USA. And hopefully those tests come off. They're going to need some practice before they go in against the Lions.
Yeah, and speaking of Razzie there, you know, the fact that Jack Nienbaar is head coach, you know, is Razzie still extremely hands-on there, or what way does he do it? We had a couple of guys on. We had Peter Steftatoy, and we had Eben Estebet, and we had the Beast on as well, actually. So we've had a number of South African guys on. But from your perspective, you can probably say a bit more than the lads can. You know, does Razzie... You know, is he very hands-on, or does he delegate the kind of power and down to the people around him?
Well, I think there's a bit of both. I think when it comes to the test match sort of season, Rossie will be there and he'll be next to Jacques, and they'll be operating as a team as they've done together for the last 20 years at various levels of the game. I think where it's changed is that where it's out of season, Rossi's got other responsibilities as director of rugby, and got other things he's got to concentrate on, the referees, women's game, things like that. And then he can delegate all that stuff to the coaches to go around to the teams and talk to the players. When it comes to the test season, I think they're going to be hands-on like that. And especially now with the Lions, I can't see him being anywhere else but in that coaching box and being on the training field.
And what's the story with fans down there? What is the talk on the street about, you know, the idea of having fans at games, even, you know, reduced number?
Well, there's a strong argument from SA Rugby. They want fans back. They want at least 50% if they can. Obviously, financially, you can understand that whole argument. The problem comes again is it's the government's hesitancy, and obviously they have other information that we have. Cases in South Africa with COVID are down to about 1,000, 1,500 on average day, which is a long way. In January, it was in the 20,000s. So it's gone down quite a bit. The vaccine program has been lagging behind, unfortunately. But it's starting up again. It's whether it'll be done, how far it'll be done by the time the Lions get here, probably not enough to use that as an excuse. But the point being, if it is still low and if the infections aren't that high, you can put, say, 10,000 fans in a 50,000-seater stadium, social distancing. I think there's a strong argument for that. Yeah, again, it's the government hesitancy. And, we've had – our government's been one of those that it's banned alcohol four times in this last year in lockdown. It's banned a whole lot of tobacco and a whole lot of stuff. And there's been other logical arguments against these bans. They haven't really worried. So I think it's like governments everywhere. They do what they want, and you just hope they help it. But I seriously hope we do get fans, because it's – the hollow in stadiums without fans, and especially Lions tour, is something special.
Ban the sale of alcohol for even bringing back to your own house, like.
It's been banned everywhere. It's been quite funny. I see how people have been, because they banned it every restaurants, off sales, everything. It's now fine again, but there's been periods for weeks that it's been banned. You see people bring things like pineapple beer and things like that in their home. Yeah, people find ways of getting alcohol, so that has happened. But I mean, yeah, when you say it's not really a contributor to COVID, they say it's a contributor to people's behaviour. But that's a whole other argument, I suppose.
The Irish government wouldn't be that brave. I'm pretty sure the government buildings here would get set on fire if they tried to do that, even for 24 hours. But the reality is, we're talking with fans, will there, won't there be? The reality is this Lions tour is going to be, it's going to be a strange one. You know, thankfully it's going ahead. But, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, we're all, you know, Thursday is the announcement for the players that are going from here. So all the focus here is, you know, who those guys are going to be. But from a South African perspective, can you tell us, you know, any outsiders that might be kind of, you know, bolters for that South African squad, and who might get in there and maybe might even feature in the test games?
I think there's a couple. I mean, I think it's the reality that the bulk of the team's going to be that World Cup winning team as well. A lot of those guys who are playing in Europe and in Japan have been stars of their clubs as well. Guys like Faf de Klerk and Kobus Reinach and those type of players will be there. In South Africa, you'll have the same sort of front row in that. But if you look at players coming through, if I look in the back line, the Sharks fullback, you probably saw of him yesterday, Apelele Fassi, he's quite a bolter as well. I think he'll be in that mix for the squad. Vidi LaRouche still should be the starting fullback. He'll definitely be around. Damien Willems, who played for the Stormers as well, be there as well. I think outside centre, the Lions-Bulls game, you would have seen Wandisile Simelane. He's a rising star, young talent. He should be there. But it's even if you look at the midfield, I mean, when you've got a Damien Delenda who's playing so well for Munster, and you've got an Andre Estes, and well, depending on what his band does now for him, you've already got two 12s there that are enough to play international rugby. So there's not a lot of place open for young stars there. Loose forwards, I can't see too many coming in. Same with the locks. I think most of the locks, depending on who's fit, if Eben and De Steff and Achis Neyman and Luat Diago are fit, I think they're probably going to be there. So I don't think you're going to see too many bolters coming through in that Springbok squad.
Who do you think the two out halves would be?
Outside halves, you've been 9 and 10.
10, sorry, the 2 10s. 2 10s, yeah.
The 2 10s. I think Andre Pollard would definitely be the one. The other one might be a bolter, but it's not a youngster. It might be Mornay Steyn.
No way.
He's been playing pretty well for the Bulls. And Frans Steyn's another one that could fill that role as a backup. Other than that, Damien Willems has been around. He's quite a good utility as well. And Elton Yankees has now gone to France to play, to get himself up to the level again to play against the Lions. So this is the real, I suppose, as doing Bosch at the Sharks. I can't see Andre Pollard being too challenged in his 10 jersey. I think if he's fit, he'll take it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Who do you think is going to win the tour?
Well, I'd be terrible if I said it wouldn't be the Springboks, but I think it's going to be very
Springboks
tough series.
Don't really watch our show, so you kind of have to say it's Ireland, or else we're just going to cut your internet connection.
Well, it depends very much on the selection. I think I'd be more worried, and I'll say this after watching the Six Nations this year, I'd be more worried there's more Welsh players in that team than there are England players. I think the psychological thing of playing English players, Springboks, if I look at them, Billy Vunipola has never really had a great test match against Springboks. He's a great player, but Wayne Vermeulen seems to have his number whenever they play against each other. So they're not that worried about the England players, I think, so much as the Wales. They always struggle against Wales. In the World Cup semi-final, it was a horrible game to watch. And Warren Gatland's way of playing with Wales is terrible to watch, but it's very effective. From a game plan point of view. So I'd be more worried if there's more Welsh players there. I think should take it at home, especially the two tests at altitude, if that's what's going to happen. I think those are going to be deciding ones, and I think they should be able to, with that team of World Cup winners, providing they're fit and they've had enough rugby, they should be able to take it.
Yeah, I think that's the big concern. Like, if you look at the Six Nations, England obviously had a very poor tournament, and the players... their key players that really struggled were all Saracens players, like the likes of Vunipolo, the Vunipolo brothers, Itoje, they just, like Farrell, they just weren't match sharp. They hadn't played enough top level games. And you know, it fell on their face for them. That could happen with South Africa. They mightn't have the quality games. Like the French Barbarians aren't going to provide a good enough challenge. So unless it's going to be internal games, that has to be a big concern.
I think it is a big concern, and I think it's something that we hope the Rainbow Cup would address.
Yeah.
If they had 6 or 7 weeks against international opposition, it would have been a different story. But that's what they've got at the moment. They've got to deal with that, and I suppose time will tell whether it's going to be good enough.
Which Irish guys do you think are going to feature on the Lions tour?
Well,
why are you giggling there? My question.
I've been watching a lot of Irish rugby, and even today I was watching Leinster as well. And I mean, I haven't seen Leinster been harassed like that word today for a long time. And I think the general guy, the two centres, Ringrose and Shaw should be there. I think I'm not sure if Johnny Sexton would make it, to be very honest, with those tens there. I don't think he's nothing more. Connor Murray would be a definite selection at nine for me. Then the two tags, I'd say, pronounce their name right. I never know if I'm pronouncing them right. The prop and the
Tig, lock. Yeah. Tig would definitely go.
Yeah.
Two tags.
And Henderson.
The two tags.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that those would be, I think the ones would be there. There might be one or two outside ones that we don't see, but
do you think CJ would go?
Would be the bulk of it.
Do you think CJ Stander?
I hope he'd go.
Yeah,
I really hope. I mean, I'm hoping he does, and I'm hoping Duan Funamava also gets in somewhere. I think it would help raise a bit of the profile of the guys. Yeah, I think CJ's local knowledge will do wonders, and I think as a farewell. I spoke to him a couple of months ago, and he said he'll even drive their bus for them around South Africa. He could be on the tour. So I think he'd be – he's a legend. I worked with him as a junior at the Bulls, and I think if there's a player that deserves a send-off, it's probably him.
Very much so. No, he'll be a huge loss to both Munster and Ireland. So, no, I think it would be a great send-off for him.
Be a nice way for him to send off. Yeah, he still has an opportunity to play a few Munster games and maybe get a trophy in the Rainbow Cup with them. But I'd be interested to ask you, Brendan. So I remember we played New Zealand on a tour in 2012, played in the three test tour. And being honest, bar Brian O'Driscoll and maybe Paul O'Connell and Ronan O'Gara, there was probably it was made pretty clear to us like that an awful lot of the players didn't really know much about us. You know, we knew so much about their team, you know, watched a lot of their players and all the rest. But is there an element of that in South Africa? Because you, in fairness, you did mention Henshaw there, but did you even know his first name? You are a journalist over there. Like, you know, is there, and I'm sure they will be looking at the guys, but, you know, I feel that there's a respect up this way for South African rugby. And I'm not saying there's a disrespect from your side, but maybe you don't watch us as closely as we watch you.
I think what happens is over here, the problem is more with the time zones, is that a lot of the games are taking place at the same time as the South African games take place. So South African fans generally watch more, South African rugby. And when Pro 14 games take place, a lot of the times evening games there are sort of 10 o'clock at night here in South Africa. So probably lose the bulk of your audience at times with that. And it's Robbie Henshaw, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's Tig Furlong, not Tig.
I think there's more now that South African teams, since South Africa's been in Pro 14, and more sort of knowledge about the teams up north. But generally, we've also been, we played in Super Rugby, we've been more Southern Hemisphere focused, and that's a reality. I think there is a education process that we're going to have with South African fans over the next couple of years, just to remind them who the teams are. Because I think if you talk to the average South African fan and you tell them who's the Dragons, they're not going to know who they are. I think they last time they Springboks toured Wales, for instance, talked to them that they're playing the Scarlets or the Dragons. not going to know who those teams are. So you got to get, do a bit of
you know, the Scarlets. Education, the Scarlets won the league around 3 years ago.
I say that, but I mean, remember the last 3 years ago, South Africa's focus was very much Super Rugby and Rugby Championship. So it's going to be a re-education process there that we need to have. That's being very honest. We have to.
That's fair enough. Just those players we've mentioned, you know, we're talking to CJ there, but, you know, you have the likes of, you know, Rickard Strauss and Quinn Roo as well, you know, South African-born guys, but through the residency rule, you know, they played a number of times for Ireland and were such great additions to the provinces, you know, and the country over here. What do you make of that, the project players that come over to Ireland?
Well, I think that's changed quite a bit. I think a couple of years ago, there used to be a bit of a resentment here in South Africa about it, about players going over there. I remember speaking to a coach when John Klein went over, and they were, well, you know, he's no big deal losing him because there's so many other forwards. But I think it's getting to a point where you understand it's a global market, it's a professional game. I mean, Piers Schoeman and Ollie Kebble there in Scotland, and those guys, those guys might have struggled to make the Springbok team. So if they've got an opportunity that side, why not? You know, it's a professional game. They you still see them around here. They still come home every holiday. I think fans understand it a lot more than they did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and the Lions tours, you know, you've probably been a journalist for a number of years. You know, were you reporting on the past couple of tours there? You know, obviously, yeah. You've had a couple of great.
I was a youngster.
2009, 97.
My second tour of my career was 97. I was still a very young journalist back then. My first tour I ever did was
40.
I was about 24, 25 around there. But my first tour, a week after I joined the newspaper, I was thrown into the 96 All Blacks tour, which was quite a sink or swim moment for me. And then the next year is the Lions tour. So I had a great start as a journalist to that career. And I also did 2009 as well. In a different capacity, I was a sports editor by that stage. And for another paper, but I did do both tours. So this will be my third one, hopefully, if we get to go to the stadiums, not do everything on Zoom.
I know. I think everyone is sick to the teeth of doing these virtual calls. If there's one area of this South African side, I know that they were outstanding in that final against England. And, you know, people are saying they might be a little bit undercooked. You were saying the same. They've a warm-up against USA. You know, will they go, you know, full bore there selection-wise? They might be minding guys as well that, you know, we're still carrying knocks. Where do you think the Lions can target South Africa and go after them? Where do you think they have to win the Test Tour?
I think the thing with the way that South Africans, any rugby team that you play, that you know, coaches work out plans, coaches study them. And I think the next time you play a team, that's why it's always, to me, those three test contests are always so fascinating, because you can lose the first test, but the amount of work in that second week that gets done and working out the game plans and coming up with alternatives is huge in a team environment. And I think from South Africa's point of view, the fact that they haven't played, they haven't had a chance to try out new things or maybe move their game along from the World Cup final. You know, Warren Gatland's going to, he's an astute coach. He's going to study that game onto every last second. If they're going to go in with the same thing, they can't be predictable. That's the thing to me. They're going to know their strengths. Their strength is their back. You know, they've got some great wingers outside. The Kanye Arm outside centre is playing some excellent rugby at the moment. But you've got to do something that's unpredictable in a test match. And those big moments are the moments that win tests. So yeah, I'm worried that they haven't moved their game plan along as such in terms of that, and that Warren Gatland might have worked out quite a few counters to these sort of things, which they haven't had chance to counter themselves in test matches.
Fair enough. Can you give me five certainties that you think are going to make it from the Northern Hemisphere on the Lions? Five certainties, in your opinion.
For the Lions squad?
Yeah.
Okay, let me think. I think
tag anyway.
Two tags, so that's two gone. Then you got
Ricky Henshaw.
Yeah, Ricky Henshaw, like you mentioned. Jason Sexton, I think he might go as well.
I think Stuart Hogg will probably be there. I think Liam Williams will probably be there as well. I think you need players that are good under the high ball at the back there. And I'm not sure if a guy like Bilagi's played enough rugby yet at the moment to be back.
What's his first name there? Go on.
What's his Manu. I'm starting to feel like I'm being ambushed here.
No, but the journalists are usually the ones ambushing the players.
It's nice to be on the other side for once.
I think Owen Farrell will definitely be there. I think he's the one player South Africans love to hate, especially after that game against Twickenham a couple of years ago with Andre Esterhazy. He'll definitely be there. Conor Murray will definitely be there. Trying to see if I can pronounce it right. Taupe Faletau, he'll be there.
Yeah.
I think the two England flankers, Sam Underhill and another name, Tom Curry. Yeah, they'll be there. I think Jamie George will be there, I reckon. And I'm trying to think now the other hooker's name. That's putting me on the spot. I don't have
a you've done well there. That's good going.
You've gone through a fair few there. In fairness, who would be your five, Matt? Do you think will definitely travel?
I think Tadhg Furlong, Atoje, like just thinking down the spine of the team. I think Faletau, you know, Ken Owens, you know, the guys who played well in the Six Nations.
That's the name I was thinking of, Ken Owens.
Yeah, Ken Owens. He's probably he's the only hooker that like Jamie George mightn't necessarily go. He'd a poor Six Nations. He hasn't played a whole lot for, obviously Saracens aren't in the top league in England. They were relegated last year. So he hasn't played top level rugby, so you're taking a big risk there. And you know, Gatland will have seen what happened to England and those guys not getting game time. I don't think he's going to take the same risk. He will maybe with one or two of them, the likes of Atoje, but I don't think he will with someone like Jamie George. I think Farrell will still go, but he's not the same cert that he was last time around.
We'll all know a lot more on Thursday anyway. Definitely some interesting calls there. Great stuff, Brendan. Cheers for coming on. And we might catch up with you at some stage during the tour. Thanks, man.
I'll be more prepared for my Q&A then.
Thanks, Brendan.
Cheers, guys. Nice chatting.
Cheers. Thanks a million.
Bye-bye. Cheers, guys. And cheers to everyone for watching and listening. A big thanks to producer Pat Paul, Anthony Dermid, and everyone that has helped getting this show together. This is House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.